モーニングプロジェクトプレゼンツ
Ladies and gentlemen, GVGP episode 58 is about to record live to tape. As the summer blazes forward full force, a couple of cold days in hell must have taken place recently. As remakes, remasters, prequels, and re-releases aplenty are on the gaming horizon, some of which we'd never expect.GVGP sees worlds collide as we travel the lands between, explore Hyrule in a new set of heels, and reload our chain-wielding double barrel as we prep for 100-degree days, try to get through our never-ending backlog, continually add to our wish list, all while fighting for 5 hours of sleep. Buckle up, turn up the volume, and finish packing.As GVGP gets underway mere days before Molly heads back to the land of the rising sun for 70% discounts. Welcome to the Generic Video Game Podcast.
So we're recording this on the 4th of July, which, to me, 4th of July is, of course, fireworks. It's grilling, which I'm going to grill as soon as we're done with this podcast. But it's also alcohol to me.getting drunk and blowing stuff up and possibly your fingers. But so I've got a weird question for you, Anthony. If I said, if I invited you out to hang out at a bar to get drinks, right? Like, hey, let's just hang out for a while and talk and get drinks whenever. Without me saying anything about where we're going or anything else, in your mind, when I say bar, what are you picturing?
Well, probably more of a sports bar / restaurant type scenario.
Right. When I think of a bar, I think of either a sports bar, like you just said. Like, and we've got places, like we've got a place called Old Chicago here, where it's not necessarily, I don't know if I'd say it's a sports bar, but it's kind of, it's a more, I think of it a little more as a restaurant-y place.That has a bar in it that you definitely go there for drink, but you're sitting down, you're eating food, you're talking, things like that, right? Which I kind of also connect to sports bars. Or I would think of, like, we might go to one of these newfangled arcade bar places, right?
Oh, yes, a barcade.
Right, a barcade. That's what I was looking for, a barcade. You know, they got arcade machines there.They've got a bar, you get some drinks, you play a lot of games, right? So you said what I was kind of expecting is probably people like us would think of a sports bar or this is a barcade. And the reason I'm asking you this is because the other day I was driving down a street and I saw a sign for a local bar. And I looked and the bar had been completely razed.And I was like, you know, that's kind of sad to me because I never really went there, but it was a place that I know my dad went to. He knew the owner personally and things like that. And then I started to think, you know, there were a number of, there were at least two different bars offhand that as a child I knew by name and I had been to.And I started to think a little more, and it's like, you know, when I think about those places, I think of them being more like as a dive bar, right? And so I don't know if everybody is going to think of what I'm thinking of, but this kind of style of bar, it's a smaller place, probably more of a local joint. It's just a bar, maybe have minimal amount of food, you know? Definitely not really arcade games, probably have...A jukebox somewhere for people who remember what a jukebox is, you know. And I was thinking, is like, do people of our generation ever even consider going to a bar like that? Right?
Like an old school, like what you've described? Yeah. Almost like what, Cheers, for lack of a better term?
Yeah. I mean, like, if I said, hey, let's go out and get a drink, would you...ever think about going to a place like that?
Well, short answer, no. I mean, if you're asking, like, if it was you asking me, because we know each other as you know, as friends, I would do it. But generally speaking, and I'm not Mr. Sociable either, for the record, to just go out and hang out like at a traditional style bar, no, I'd like to have a decent, you know, decent meal, like a place I like to go by me. And of course, I'm not going to remember the name because I'm being recorded, so I sound like an idiot. But, you know, they have good food, and I like Spanish coffees, and, you know, they have good alcohol. But, yeah, I don't know, old school style bar, I'm going to chalk that up to two things. That's either going to be for an older generation or maybe smaller towns where, you know, stuff like that. There's a community for that. But generally speaking, I'm going to lean towards no.
Because I think, in thinking about it, I think since I turned old enough to drink, I think I've been to that kind of bar once. And it was specifically because, and it wasn't even like as divey as I would think of, but it was because we were going there to play darts, basically. And we had a small group of friends like, oh, let's go to this place and, you know, play darts. And I don't want to insult anybody when I say what I'm going to say. If you're the kind of person who goes to those places, hey, you do what you want to do, right? But said in me thinking about this, in me seeing that sign, thinking about that bar used to exist, that my dad went there, you know, I have these vivid memories of both. Like, my mom was not a huge bar person, but she would go because she was going with my dad. But my dad and my grandma both were bar people, right? And I just started thinking about it, and it's like that idea to me seems like so, like, for me would be such a pathetic place that I'm in my life. Right? Again, I'm not trying to insult anybody, but that's the stereotype to me, is like, why are you going to that kind of a bar, right? Because like you said, you and I, we're going to hang out, we're going to get food, get some drinks, maybe play some arcade games, right? And then go somewhere else, sit there for a while talking and stuff, you know. If something really big is going on in your life, you might sit there for a couple hours, keep ordering drinks and like talk about stuff and whatever, just have a place to kind of a neutral area to talk about things or whatnot. But like, there was this culture, which I'm wondering if it still exists outside of the small towns that where you have nothing else to do, of just like going to a bar and just being there for like hours, right? And like, why are you there? You're there because you're drinking, because you're trying to like escape your real life. Maybe you don't want to be at home. Like, it's, and I'm not even saying like a loneliness thing, right? It's like, you know, because my grandma had her husband, my dad had his family at home, you know. So why were they going to these places? Like, it seemed to me like they were going because they were trying to escape from their life.
I think you're hitting the nail on the head.
But it's just like, is like, does that exist as an escapism anymore? Like, I mean, this is going to sound kind of nerdy, but like, for us, right, is our escapism like, I'm going to sit down and play games for like a couple hours, you know? Or I'm going to sit down and binge a Netflix show, right? Like, was that a product of the time when people just didn't have anything else to use to escape from life? Or was it the fact that I just came from a family of people who hated their lives in general?
I think there's a lot to unpack there. I think it's a combination of stereotypes, what people did at the time, not having the same alternatives that we do now. Not saying that they're all better, it's just different. I think it's a combination of things.
Because just like thinking back to that, it's just like, man, like were my dad and my grandma just like miserable in their lives? You know,
well, I'll try to make you feel better.
Their escape, or
I don't want this to turn into the GVGP therapy episode. But so my parents directly didn't drink. There was almost never any alcohol in the house. There was no look. Every family has its problems. So I want to make crystal clear that my parents, I have no brothers, no sisters, but there were still definitely problems that were there. That said, there was zero drinking. Now, beyond that, other relatives, of which I was close to that lived on the East Coast, many of which have now passed. While they weren't directly in the house that I was, while they weren't bar people to make you feel better, they drank all day at home. But vodka, 7 and 7s, just 24. I mean, I can't picture a couple of those relatives, and they treated me great, and I never had any issues. You know, this wasn't like an abusive thing or a bad thing, but just in terms of the visual, I mean, literally, my, I guess I'll say it, nobody's going to know, my uncle, who I was close to, who passed, I think 2 years ago now. I hadn't been in contact with him for probably about a decade, but I literally can't envision him without me picturing him on the couch, legs crossed, with a picnic-style plastic cup, which always had, I'm not kidding, which always had vodka in it. So, and he was one of those, I believe, that, what do they call it, where you get to a point, you know, you drink, you get drunk, but then you get to, what is it? It's a functional.
Yeah, functional. Functional.
Yeah,
alcoholic.
So, you know, so the only stories I remember is there was one time he had gotten his nose busted from a softball. His daughter's then boyfriend, this was in the 80s, threw a softball on the street and was like, hey, you know, like joking around, and he wasn't ready for it and hit him in the face, busted him in the nose. Why am I telling you this? Well, because when he went to the hospital, he had to go to the hospital for a couple of days or a few days. He didn't have his alcohol, so then, you know, he was getting the shakes and, you know, the repercussions from that. So anyway, long story short, you know, I think each generation goes through different things and handles it in different ways. But, you know, at the same time, you also learn, and I'm making a very blanket statement, you know, you also learn everybody's got problems, mental problems, needs therapy, everybody's messed up. But that's, yeah.
Well, the good part is, if you're feeling pathetic, if you're hating your life, and you're sitting at home doing nothing but playing video games, you got lots of new ones to look forward to, don't you, Anthony?
Yeah, so, well, you know, usually we're always like, hey, it's been 2 months, it's been 4 months, it's been 6 months, so it's only been, it's been 1 month since
what?
We recorded. Yeah, I know. So that's a shocker. 2014, 2015.
Because Molly's still at home alone with nothing to do.
So, you know, in the last 4 weeks, there were a lot of announcements, and much like the intro stated, lots of re-releases, remasters, but there are some very exciting things. So, the two major shows, we're not going to do a deep dissection, but I'll blast a few things, then we can pick and choose. We left off right after the State of Play, and we were mere days away from the Xbox Showcase, which for Xbox, I will say, was very good by modern day standards. I will give them that thumbs up.
Yeah, and it was. Now here's the thing: I've heard a lot of people say that it was one of the best shows they've had in years and years, and that's probably true. But
yes, for Microsoft, yes.
I also worried that, at least a few of the games they showed off, I don't know we have facts that they do exist in a as playable games, so you know.
Here's the trade-off, and I'm not trying to knock Xbox. I don't want to sound like an Xbox hater. I'll say this. For Xbox themselves, probably their best efforts since 2013. The scale I use, and I've said this many times before in the past, I have to compartmentalize E3 95 through like 2000, because nothing, with the exception of like when FF7 Remake was originally shown over a decade ago, I think you would agree, you have to keep the old CES shows and E3s separate, because you and I are dinosaurs, and you that will never be recaptured. So by 2010s, 2020 standards, Xbox did great. That said, you know, I could make the argument, though, the Xbox showing, in many ways, what you alluded to, was the opposite of Nintendo's Nintendo Direct, in that Microsoft showed a handful of big guns. They gave the people what they wanted to see. Everything from Doom to more Starfield content to Gears 6, the prequel, A Perfect Dark made a surprise showing, which was shown God knows how long ago, and I believe Ubisoft is helping them develop it. So they brought out the big hitters, franchises that they've paid for. They showed a lot. But much of that stuff didn't even have release dates attached to it. And some of that stuff, while running in engine or utilizing in-game visuals, were using assets rearranged or particularly set up for that showing. Whereas Nintendo, they had a couple little, aces up their sleeve, but almost everything they showed is coming out in the next 6 months.
Yeah, I guess. Okay, so first of all, I'm just still unendingly frustrated that State of Decay 3 has no date. And to be fair, this is my feeling. I do believe they did show a little more gameplay after the main show, which I've not watched. But I also got frustrated too that so little of that was actual gameplay. My concern is stuff like Fable and Perfect Dark, because we've heard so many things about the problems those games have had with development.
Right.
Like, there's this idea in video games of a vertical slice. And a vertical slice is, so you think of a cake, right? You know, mm-hmm. if you cut the very top of a cake, you'll see the top layer of the cake, right? But you don't know what's below it. And so a vertical slice is you're kind of cutting vertically into the cake and pulling out a slice of cake so you see the entirety of what's inside that cake.
Mm-hmm.
So a vertical slice in gaming is they make a demo of or some other playable version of the game where instead of showing off one piece of the game, like what is the gameplay, what is the exploration, what is the romance system, whatever, is you're kind of seeing all these different elements of the game come together. And so my concern about Perfect Dark when watching that was what they showed the entirety of what they could have showed in that moment, right? Like when you go back to the original reveal of the iPhone, Steve mm-hmm. Jobs on stage had three different iPhones that each specifically did three different functions. Not one of those iPhones could have shown you the entirety of the iPhone. So, like, one was specifically made to, like, for showing off photos and things like that.
Oh, wow. Okay. It wasn't all put together
because
at that point.
Because the phone was not ready to go yet. But by doing what he did, it made it seem like one complete iPhone device that was working for everything.
Right.
So, I guess my concern is, if you played that section of Perfect Dark and did anything other than what they showed you, would gameplay exist there?
Right, would it crash or not be existent or whatever?
So that's my concern is, in Perfect Dark, you know, is there actual game beyond that? And then Fable, is there game beyond the little pieces they showed? And that's kind of the problem I have, is that with some of these games that they showed off, it's been so long that we've been waiting for them that I still don't trust that they actually exist.
But you know what I think? Look, they've had this stuff cooking for a while. That said, correct me if I'm wrong or if I'm out of line, don't you feel they tried to put this package or presentation as such in part because of all of the heat?
Sure.
Phil Spencer, yeah. Microsoft was getting mere weeks before with the layoffs, the closing of Tango Gameworks. I felt, you know, this was kind of a Code Red. Now, look, I didn't even want to bring this up, but because you're getting into the weeds this much, and I don't want to sound like Mr. Negative, did you see the reports allegedly that there were certain diversions or distractions as to get the crowd to react in certain ways as to what was being shown?
No, I didn't see that, no.
Oh. I would have... If I knew you hadn't seen it, I would have done my due diligence before we went and hit record to present that to you, but I didn't want to So, you know, I do feel like, you know, all of this stuff is real to an extent. It was a great showing from Microsoft, you know, you have to put your best foot forward, but a lot of this also I feel was calculated damage control.
Yeah, I think especially after all the things that have happened with Xbox platform and, like, you know, they're making games now for other consoles, and are there any exclusives anymore? Like, I think they had to have a good showing. It was a good showing, but like I said, I don't trust them right now on the fact that anything, like, if Nintendo shows me a game, right, I believe it exists. Like, we didn't see much of Metroid 4, but I think, or Metroid Prime 4, sorry. But I think that them showing at this point means that it's got to exist in some form as a game.
Yeah, it's legit. Right, correct.
Because Nintendo wouldn't be showing it otherwise. With Xbox, I just don't trust this stuff until we see it. You know, I'm hopeful. Like, I really, really want State of Decay 3. I would like to enjoy Fable, some other stuff, you know. But for me, like, the best things of the show, and we'll get to this exact same point when it comes to Nintendo's show, was third-party stuff. You know, we saw Metal Gear Solid Delta, which is I've never played MGS3, so it looks like a good way to finally play it. I'm super excited for Expedition 33. South of Midnight looks good. I refuse to play the new Life is Strange because it's blasphemy to me.
But I've got one here for you, not to cut you off, and we haven't discussed this. Now, I'm going to bring this up in particular because you privately told me about this game an earlier entry in the series that you went back to with some of your free time and went through. You love this title, which I really didn't know, and I am not an expert on this. Mm-hmm. What were your feelings on the showing of the new Dragon Age?
I'm really worried about that. I don't know. I don't. And I saw a lot of people not to go ahead.
Yeah, not to echo the negativity, but I saw a lot of people who were displeased with the art direction.
I've heard better things about it the more that's been shown, and that supposedly that trailer was just a really bad presentation of it. But yeah, as somebody who is still trying to beat, as of like a couple weeks ago, still trying to beat Dragon Age Inquisition, just because I love that game so much and I'm trying to clear everything out of it, I when I saw it on the presentation, I swore it was like some kind of just weird, like offshoot game from Dragon Age. I didn't realize this was supposed to be the next big one, and like none of the characters appealed to me whatsoever, but we'll see, you know. And just like, I guess too, because part of it is coming out of Inquisition, there's a certain understanding of how the story is going to be going, and it's supposed to be a kind of a darker, more serious story was what we thought it was going to be, at least that's what the impressions that I was getting. And that trailer just seemed, I don't want to say Guardians of the Galaxy, but does that make sense of what I'm saying when I say that? Is just kind of this new era of, you know, Suicide Squad, kind of the crazy ragtag group of people who are going to go out there and save the day kind of thing. I don't know, you know.
Hey, did you, friendly reminder here, gamer to gamer, remember to clear a little over 300 gigs from your hard drive, so you can play day one on Xbox Game Pass, the new Call of Duty Black Ops 6.
Yeah.
Could you believe that? Which, for anyone who's living under a rock, takes place during the 1991 Gulf War era, which, you know, visually, I'm not going to not, I mean, the game always looks state-of-the-art visually. We're not talking, I just couldn't believe, and in all fairness, I think people were saying that's like with the campaign, multiplayer, everything downloaded, but not only does one need north of 300 gigs of space on their hard drive, I dare say I also read it requires an always online connection, not just because of the multiplayer components, but I dare say for also streaming or cloud-based elements for the graphics as well,
allegedly. I think I did hear that, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny is I think, like, literally half of my Xbox Series X's storage is taken up by Flight Simulator, Phantasy Star Online 2, and one other. God, what's the other really big game I've got? I've got like three games that are like almost half my storage. So yeah, I just like the bloat that these games are getting these days is ridiculous.
Somebody has to, we talked about this privately, somebody has to come up with a technology, a new compression technique or something.
They have it. They have it. That's the thing, is like these new consoles have that technology. They built it into them. So I think part of it, and this is the problem I have as an Apex Legends player, is that you think, okay, there's this season stuff, right?
Right.
And so every season they change which, because currently in Apex, there's four maps, right? But every season, they put three maps in the rotation. I think it's usually three. And then they keep one out. But so every season, when they update it, they change which maps are active, which means you have to re-download at least one of those maps again. And they get to keep all these maps locally. And then every time they add even one new item to the game, that has to always be in the game going forward, because if somebody bought it, it has to be usable. It has to be...
Oh, wow.
You have to be able to see it, right?
So right. The thing that we've interesting. Got into I never thought of that.
Is in all this, like, live service stuff that now people are demanding is they have to keep adding and keep adding and keep adding all this stuff to all these games, and you can never just clear it out.
Wow.
That's a problem too that games like Apex have, where if you say, okay, there's too many guns, we need to get rid of some of the old guns, but you can't now because people have paid for skins for those guns.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just get rid of the gun.
Wow.
So I think that's part of the Call of Duty thing, is because it's like the whole battle royal mode and everything else now. Right. It's like it's got to have so much data at one time.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
The only other thing I have to say on the Xbox thing, and this is more generally speaking multi-platform, and then I'll let you finish up your thoughts on that. You know, we're always a little bit more Japan-centric in our hobby, and our, you know, whether it be from anime to the world of video games to art, you know, we do respect Western developers, but boy, after some of these showcases, I'm starting to look to China.
China and Korea, man. Like,
yeah, they're really putting their best foot forward here from the world of mobile gaming and PC, now starting to tackle console gaming, it seems. Everything from Phantom Blade Zero to Wu Chang to Fallen Feathers, Wukong on the horizon. The only other thing I will say, you and I have discussed this ad nauseum. Look, some of these games made my wish list. I'm legitimately interested, especially Phantom Blade Zero. When I heard it was primarily influenced by Metal Gear Rising, it went right on my list. These games are looking beautiful, high quality, but there is now also a look, an aesthetic, and style that is now becoming very confusing with all of these style of releases.
You mean like the looks kind of like Dark Souls, but it's an Asian main character, an Asian world, and yeah, like,
and it goes even deeper than that. And this is not a knock on the culture, or you know, this I don't want this to be taken that way, but there are certain, whether it's the Monkey King storyline or just like certain like you're seeing certain things over and over again, and I had it in my head, I would have bet you money, I thought Phantom Blade Zero was a sequel to a third-person action game back from 360 PS3 era. I must have completely fabricated that in my mind. While there was a Phantom Blade in the past, it was mobile only, and God knows what I was thinking of.
No, the problem, too, is like, okay, remember there's like that, there's that one Monkey King Journey to the West game.
Yes, PS3 era, the one by Ninja Theory.
No. There's the new one. There's a new one. Like,
oh, is it the Tecmo one?
No.
Oh, Lord.
I can't even, that's the problem, right? And this isn't like a racism thing. This is a problem with just when you get to certain points when like there's a whole bunch of games that look the same. But there was that point where like there were so many like Dark Souls clones. You're like, I can't even keep track anymore.
Right.
Like there's that one really impressive looking.
Well, Wukong is the one. That's the one Hideo Kojima tweeted about.
Is that the one I'm thinking
That's
of?
Coming out in August. It's like really super high quality visuals. Loosely based on
Journey to the West.
Yep, yeah, it has. It's Wukong.
Okay, yeah. That might be the one. Yeah, but okay, so Black Myth Wukong, right?
That's right.
Like in this presentation, where did the email go? We had like Wu Chang.
Yes, Fallen Feathers. That's correct.
Right, yep. And there's some other games, and it's just like I can't even keep like. There's what's the game that okay? I know you even put on the notes here because I played it because you played it. Oh, Stellar Blade. There's There's like Stellar Blade. There's like Phantom Blade. Zero.
Well, we have a side discussion on that. And by the way, I'm still sticking with Stellar Blade. I have about 40 hours in it. I think I'm 60% done. Just for me, just having to tell the world, I'm so proud of myself. The thing with that is, so our joke there is, while that's not getting confused like all of those other new Chinese-based games, while Stellar Blade looks, you know, beautiful visually and plays great, that's the whole South Korean character model debacle.
Right.
Where, you know, and I just downloaded, I only got to play it 5 minutes, but, I just downloaded the first Descent, which is also South Korean. I must be getting a sickness to having now downloaded a second multiplayer game in the last couple months. But, yeah, that's a whole other dilemma.
Yeah, you got to do, it's like that part in time when there was like, Warface and War something and
Warframe,
War Combat, and you know, you got to get better with these names,
right?
Because it's just getting to a point where it's so easy to forget like what some of these things are,
right?
But
now,
but you know what I'll never forget, Anthony? I'll never forget the day that it looks like Capcom versus SNK3 might actually be possible again.
I can't believe we're having this conversation.
And I hate that this was spoiled for me.
Did I ruin it for you?
No. It was that thing where it's like, was it Summer Games Fest?
Is that where this
was shown? Yeah. Because I was like, I forgot about that. And I'm like, I'll just watch it later. And then I saw this announced online, and I was like, oh my god, that would have been the most amazing, like, reveal ever if I had seen that live.
If you would have started talking CVS3 to me without me knowing, I would have thought you spent too much time at the local bar. Because, I mean, we have both expressed, all jokes aside, and it's not being like, down in the dumps, I legitimately did not think even the conversation of CVS3 happening would ever, like, that was, to me, written off. Like, there's another thing I want to mention right now, but I don't want to spoil it. It is fighting game related. I'll save that. But, you know, I guess we could look at this a couple different ways. You know, when you're getting Street Fighter characters and God knows what else, I'm going to make up stuff like Garfield and who knows what else in Fortnite. I mean, anything is possible, right?
Sure, right.
And then on the, you know, SNK, technically, while we always, you know, they still have a lot of this Japanese development, they are Chinese and Saudi owned. I'm just making that statement in terms of, you know, it is new ownership over the last 5 to 10 years or whatever. But I guess, you know, if there's money to be had and the deal is right, it can happen. The thing I'm most excited about, and I guess I'll give you the floor to discuss specifically what this entails. I'm most excited, and I'm a huge SNK fan, but I'm going to say it. I'm most excited to see a couple longtime beloved SNK characters crafted in 2024 how they should look.
So for anybody who doesn't know, basically, what happened is Capcom revealed the year 2 DLC characters for Street Fighter 6.
Yep.
And so the the first, which just hit recently, was M. Bison. Yep. Now, I am a notable M. Bison hater. I've hated the character for a long, long time. But they actually did some kind of interesting things with him this time
around.
Awesome
design.
And what I really love, and this to be fair, this started with Street Fighter 5. But you go back to Street Fighter 4, right? And all characters looked like they had forever. And what's kind of become interesting about Street Fighter 4 was that seemed like kind of the, okay, if you've loved Street Fighter until now, this is going to be the game that plays on that. But past this, we're going to do some new things. It's kind of what it feels like now. And Street Fighter V took some chances with updating character looks. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But Street Fighter VI has really continued that idea of we don't have to have these characters look the same anymore. Right. And so Bison looks completely different. The second character that was announced as part of this was Elena, and she's thankfully got a new look that looks really good. So very excited for that. But the other two characters in this DLC pack are, and this is weird to say, from SNK, gets not one but two characters in this, in Terry Bogard, which I can get in a fight with Anthony whether it should be Terry or Kyo. I understand why it's Terry, but it's always Terry. But then near and dear to my heart is Mai Shiranui is the second character. Okay, so SNK characters coming to Street Fighter. Why is this a big deal? First of all, it's a big deal because for a long time there hasn't really been any connection between Capcom and SNK.
Yes, this is layered. You're correct. Keep going.
The only thing that has happened was...
In canon, that is. Officially canon.
It's recently, SNK did bring back its Neo Geo Pocket Color SNK versus Capcom games. So there had to be some kind of connection there.
That's a good point. I didn't think of that.
In terms of working together again, but there really hasn't been much past that. Okay, so that's one big deal. The kind of far bigger deal in the grand scheme of things is that this is the first time a mainline Street Fighter game has ever had a guest character come in from outside of Capcom. Now, Capcom for years has done quote-unquote guest characters that are still in-universe. Street Fighter Alpha made this really famous by having Guy come in and then having Cody, Rolento.
But that's within Capcom's
But still like technically in the universe of Street Fighter.
And if I'm being a real nerd, Final Fight is within the Street Fighter universe because I think Final Fight originally was codenamed Final Fight 89.
Street Fighter 89.
Yeah, so anyway, throwing that out there. Yes. So yes.
Yeah, so Final Fight was originally going to be part of the Street Fighter series back before Street Fighter was what it became. Street Fighter 5 had Akira from Rival Schools, which again, that's still in universe because Sakura has gone to Rival Schools.
Oh, that's right.
So there have been this in universe thing. This is the first time ever that Street Fighter has gotten an outside of Capcom guest character, and near and dear to me and Anthony's hearts, SNK is the company to offer Street Fighter its first ever outside universe guest characters, and we get not one but two. It's crazy. This is, and I've seen some people, I think kind of the younger people, not to rag on them, but the younger players or the players who don't care about fighting games totally as much, this has been a little bit disappointing because they said like, why couldn't we have had two other classic Street Fighter characters come back instead of these outside people? Why are SNK taking these spots or whatever?
Well,
as fighting game fans, this is huge. Not only for what it means right now, but for what it can mean down the road as well.
Well, I'll put some of those naysayers at ease. I'll try to justify Terry Bogard. And I sent you proof of this in the past because this is going to sound like complete BS. But this is from the official SNK King of Fighters historic book that I bought a couple years ago. And the original Capcom designer, the one that went to SNK, you know who I'm talking about, behind Art of Fighting. So he worked at Capcom and was on SF1. On the intro of SF1, the guy that busts through the brick wall, are we on the same page?
Yeah.
That was the basis. That unnamed character was arguably the first unnamed iteration of Terry Bogard.
I didn't know that.
And I'm pausing here because I'm making sure I'm not mixing up the characters. Yes, I will say later when I'm, because I have a digital PDF on my phone because I have no life. I will send that to you later when I'll cut the screen. Yes, so an argument can be made that he clarified himself that that was kind of officially, unofficially Terry Bogard.
Yeah, for people who don't know, like the reason SNK's fighting games existed is that some of the team who made the original Street Fighter 2 went over to SNK, and they created kind of Fatal Fury, and that's where, like, I guess the question is, did Mortal Kombat 1 come first, or did Fatal Fury come first? Like, my feeling is Fatal Fury, but
I don't know why. For some reason in my head, without cheating, I feel like Fatal Fury was Holiday 91. I hate to say it, I think MK might have been a little bit before, but now, how did MK get into this conversation?
Well, okay, because to me, especially as somebody who has worked at EGM, like, one of the big early rivalries you can think of is Street Fighter versus Mortal Kombat.
Oh, right? No argument here, 1,000%.
But that was a marketplace rivalry, while Capcom versus SNK fighting games was more of a familial rivalry.
Yeah, and for MK, that was arguably more of a sequel to, like, we had seen that tech dabbled in with Pit Fighter, and then MK originally was essentially supposed to be like a blood sport, and Jean-Claude Van Damme was supposed to be the main character. And I can't believe I never put two and two together. It's so obvious. That's why the game, while JCVD didn't do the MK at the time, that's what birthed Johnny Cage.
And then later on, of course, then Jean-Claude comes in and voices Johnny Cage.
Ironically, yes.
For MK1, it's like a DLC pack or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Correct. Yep.
Yep.
But so, yeah, back to what you're saying. Now, I will say this. You mentioned EGM, and I don't know what you're going to say, and I don't have any spoilers. I believe it was the then relaunch issue of EGM, and I haven't looked at it in over a decade. And ironically, I think that had SF4 on the cover with the blue hue. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Was there not an interview in there? I think it was Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat got a mention that I think Capcom confirmed. I think that was like, this was in 2010, that issue, 2009 or 2010. They confirmed on the record that there were at least discussions at making an attempt with Midway or NetherRealm, whoever it was at the time. They did want to do an MK versus SF. But did you remember that?
Anthony knows more about my magazine than I do. I don't remember that exactly.
But I believe one of the sticking points, and this won't surprise you, like, you know, they wanted to make this work.
Mm-hmm.
One of the sticking points, and not a surprise, was how to handle the fatalities.
Yeah, which that's been the entire time with, like, Injustice and stuff like that. Like, that's been one of the things is...
Right.
Fatalities have been a big part of why certain crossovers haven't happened with Mortal Kombat, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Could you imagine... You ready for this wacko nonsense? Could you imagine if Capcom snuck in a future season pass, like, maybe just Scorpion?
So here's the thing is I don't like outside canon guest characters in fighting games for the most part. We have to discuss. I mean, we're not gonna discuss if Smash is really a fighting game or not. I'm not opening that can of worms, but makes sense for Smash. Okay.
I lean more towards no, but that's an entire episode unto itself.
Tekken, I do not care about Tekken on any level as a game. I used to like Tekken 2, but past that, I just don't care. So whatever they do, they can do. And it's been funny to me, some of the kind of weirdo cameo guest characters that they've done.
Mm-hmm.
I am one of those kind of purists when it comes to more like Capcom fighting games and SNK fighting games. So for me, because there is a history of Capcom versus SNK, I'm an SNK fan. I'm totally on board with this, but of course, this now opens the idea of, are we going to get other guest characters in the future, which I think is going to be a yes.
Yes.
Most people will love that. I won't, but...
You're talking for SF?
Yes, but it then comes down to, okay, what is logical? Tekken is obviously logical, right? Especially because Street Fighter Cross Tekken was a thing.
Yeah.
That's logical. But then you get to, like, okay... What past that? Like, are we gonna get Guilty Gear characters in? I don't know.
I don't think
You know,
knee jerk reaction. I don't think Guilty Gear works in there.
Yeah, I don't think it works.
You know what I would say? See, my problem here is there's a plethora of other fighters I can list, but if I start listing them, all I'm doing is creating Capcom versus SNK3.
Right, right.
Because I would make the argument how. You know, how do you not get Ryo or Robert in there because of their fighting style and then the jab from Capcom to SNK with Dan? I mean, we can talk about this all day.
Yeah, but I don't think we're getting more SNK characters. If you're getting that, you are making a Capcom versus SNK 3. okay. Could we get Mortal Kombat characters? I think absolutely. Like that, because then you're not bringing Chun-Li and Ryu into Mortal Kombat to get their spines pulled out, right? It's the other way. So that works.
Okay. What if you bring in Sonya as a fellow cop to Chun-Li bringing down Bison?
You could do that, right?
Now, there actually is a very important thing I forgot, and I'm glad we kept talking because I was going to make this point and I forgot, and this is unconfirmed. Okay. So we're in Wacko World right now, right? Because of this Capcom SNK crossovers, what's going to work and whatnot. There is one potential video gamey excuse that Capcom has within Street Fighter VI to excuse all this. Did you see some eagle eye, and I don't think it was doctored, but who knows? Did you see some eagle eye?
I think I showed this to you, by the way.
Was it you?
I think I showed it to you.
Bison Super, and yes. If you zoom in, yes. It had in the background like the various busted TV screens, or it was akin to the opening of CBS with
Yeah, so when in that, okay, in the initial trailer, because it wasn't then in the official trailer, but in the initial trailer shown at Summer Games Fest, Bison's, like, there's that shot of, like, Bison's hat on the chair, and then he does that energy thing, and he's, like, fighting against this big energy stuff, whatever it is. But in that, somebody, yeah, like you're saying, some eagle-eyed person saw that in the background were all these kind of, like faint images of, like, screens of fighting games with, like, old Street Fighters and stuff like that. So the idea is this Bison somehow breaking canon and opening up kind of the multiverse?
Right? Yes, like a parallel universe excuse or alternate timeline because of his power.
Yes. So, but as I said, I think the question becomes like, what games are possible? Because I also think like Dead or Alive, is that popular enough that they're going to make lots of Dead or Alive characters?
Maybe. I'm going to say I'm going to say no to that one.
So there's not a lot of other fighting games that I think are going to be big enough and that would work. So I have to assume that Mortal Kombat is a good possibility. Because just you can make Mortal Kombat characters work in Street Fighter in a way that like Guilty Gear characters probably couldn't.
I was going to make the stupidest statement in the world that would be just so dumb.
What?
I mean, wouldn't it be ironic they put a couple characters in from Fighter's history from the game that was the lawsuit against Capcom and it gets reworked?
Amazing. But we would like 0.01% of the marketplace would get it's so and stupid. Love it, but...
It's so dumb. I would say a couple MK. Once again, while I'm not a huge MK fan, but I did go to bat. I stick to my guns. 10 and 11. I got to give them credit. But the only reason I'm so excited for the possibility of a couple MK characters in there is because I want to see them in the SF6 Capcom art style.
Right, which I'm super excited to see how Terry look.
Yes, that's the reasoning for my excitement in this is because it's in their artist's hands. Now, all of this said on the flip side for SNK, look, a game I've been quiet on, and I think it's going to play good, but I'm not losing any sleep over this, respectfully. you have to talk about Fatal Fury, City of the Wolves. And the reason I say you have to talk about Fatal Fury is I feel the chances 95% you're going to see at least one or two Capcom characters make it into that.
Yeah, I guess that's the question
what you're going to say, I'm probably going to say yes to, but I mentioned Fatal Fury first because that's next.
Yes. Or do they save it and do they have a Capcom team for 16?
I'm going to say that SNK is impatient and they want a capital. I'm going to say you might see both depending on how. I'm going to say you get one or two in Fatal Fury. And then also maybe asterisk a team in KOF.
Yeah, I said, trust me, it makes complete sense that you would see a couple guest characters in the next Garo, you know, like,
right.
Because that because it is next and it would very easily work and you know, for first DLC or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. But just as we now have hope of a Capcom versus SNK3.
Molly and I had to check the calendar to see if it was April 1st because we're like, what's going on?
Just as it's revealed that Capcom is now working again with a company that we thought it would never work with anymore, we now also have hope, Anthony.
This is shocking.
Of a Marvel versus Capcom 4? Ooh. Because in the place that you would never expect a gigantic fighting game announcement to come out during the latest Nintendo Direct with everything else it had for all of you Nintendo nerds who go crazy over that stuff. Some of us freaked out when we saw some Marvel versus Capcom showing up again.
Specifically, Marvel versus Capcom Fighting Collection, which will encompass, I believe, seven titles.
Yeah, six fighting games, and then one.
And I got to tell you, for the hardcore, for the few that remember, we're talking about the Punisher as the belt scroller, the beat 'em up action. That was a fantastic beat 'em up.
I don't think I've ever actually played it.
I have a weird memory. I was younger, probably 12, 13, 14, and I always used to play kind of solo, or sometimes I play games with my dad sometimes, but primarily I haven't changed much. I like to play by myself, and it was one of the few times I remember being in the arcade. I was playing it, and the guy walked up to me, older guy at the time, put the quarters in, and I think he chose Nick Fury, and the reason I always remember this is because it was someone I didn't know, random, and we wound up going through the entirety of the Punisher. You know, God, that must have been, what, like 30 years ago now? Jesus Christ. But other sidebar, I'm only throwing this in here not to confuse things. Technically, though, wasn't there an overseas and very good conversion, by the way, of Punisher for Mega Drive? Or have people forgotten about that?
Yes, and it's unfortunately, it's what it's... No, I think it did come out here, too. But it's...
Really?
It's, well, because it's one of those, it's one of the most rare Genesis games.
I was going to say, if that came out in the U.S., what is that, $1 million? I can't recall that at all.
Let me see, because I know as somebody who, you know, is collecting Genesis games, it's one of those kind of like Holy Grail games.
Yeah, so while Molly's looking that up, this collection, this dream collection will encompass X-Men COTA, Children of the Atom, Marvel Superheroes, X-Men versus Street Fighter, which is a personal, that's a lot of nostalgia for me because of my Saturn days. Marvel Superheroes versus Street Fighter, which every time I see that, I always think of the comedic Saturn exclusive entry. MVC, Marvel versus Capcom 1, a personal favorite of mine from a stage, from a hand-drawn sprite work look, and I thought the soundtrack on that one was phenomenal. MVC 2, the reason that a lot of people are here and excited, Marvel vs. Capcom 2 is out of Marvel Jail, and The Punisher.
So, by the way, Punisher, complete in-box copy on Genesis is currently $350 for the
And that's stateside? That's a North American copy?
Yes.
Wow. You don't own that, do you?
No.
Did you ever see that on shelves back in the day or anything?
I You know, that's a good question. Like, I wonder when it came out. I don't know.
Did it have? Is that one of those that had like the red trim, the red side, or?
Yeah. Okay. So it was 1994, which I think is the problem.
Wow.
It was one of those kind of later right. releases.
Right.
Okay. So like Capcom, I cannot think of a better time if you love Capcom fighting games, because this is the third collection they've kind of put out now. They had the Street Fighter 30th anniversary collection, and they had that Capcom Fighting.
Yes, Capcom Fighting Game Collection, which, 2 years ago now.
Which brought some games that we just had never gotten before in the yep. West. And then now this. So,
yes.
So like, man, is it a good time if you love Capcom fighting games and want to have copies of them? But that this is a shocking, because everybody has said, you know, everybody who's known about this has said like this was one of those kind of things that just nobody had any expectations to happen. Partially because, I mean, not only the fact they were talking about Marvel and the costs have gone way up, you know.
Oh, because, I didn't know that. I didn't think of that.
You talked like, because like Max on YouTube has yes. Maximilian has talked about this kind of thing, about the history of this kind of stuff, and how like back when they were doing those early games, like Marvel was so desperate for money that the costs were low and they really didn't care like what was done with some of these characters.
Oh.
And the fact that like the original X-Men Children of the Atom was, I think, so cheap otherwise that they used the actual voice actors from the X-Men TV,
the animated
cartoon.
Series.
Yeah.
Wow.
For that was the only game that actually did that.
Amazing.
But not only that, but this collection is really important because this is the first not reworking them for a home console, but this is the first time we're seeing a Naomi game.
Oh, like a straight arcade.
Yes, in a collection. Because people will say like, okay, we had a bunch of Dreamcast stuff. Well, Dreamcast was based on Naomi, and Naomi was
right.
Dreamcast. And also some of that stuff could have been reworked for home versions. And then you had like Marvel vs. Capcom 2 on the PS3 and Xbox 360. But that version is kind of notorious because it was a remade version of the game that did some things like adding widescreen that actually broke some parts of the game and stuff like that.
Oh,
and some of the elements of the game were off.
Wow.
So that was a complete remake, whereas this is the first time that Capcom is actually in how they're doing emulating like the Naomi game.
Right.
Which then leads
I know what you're gonna say.
Into a point where a bunch of other Capcom fighters and stuff may become possible.
Right. I thought you were gonna go back to CVS 1 and 2.
That too. It's then because of this and because of what just happened with SNK, now we also have a Capcom versus SNK collection possible.
Right.
Like getting old fighting games at home has never been more exciting.
Right. You know, with all of these.
Because then we also have to include that, like, I recently just purchased from Japanese Amazon. They're waiting in Japan for me. I got, you know, KOF 98 Ultimate Match on PS4, and I got the KOF 13 re-release on PS4.
Oh, wow.
So there's so many. And you got the SNK collections, like the Samcho collection, whatever. It's a fantastic time for retro fighting games.
Wow. I spent $1 million on the limited collector's edition of Samcho on PS4 years ago from Limited Run.
I missed that somehow. I have no idea how I missed that.
Don't feel bad, because, I mean, while I do stay on top of a lot of this stuff, there have been so many other SNK-based ones I've passed up just because of finance. And, you know, I always want that clamshell-type box when I see it, but it's, you know, the deal.
Right.
But so you're picking those up for when you go to Japan?
Yeah, they're at my mother-in-law's house right now waiting for me when I go there.
So. What did they cost you? Like 8 cents?
It was literally like I think KOF 98 Ultimate Match was like $18.
Damn.
And then 13 was like $30. I mean, 20 or something like that.
God, that's like one morning at Starbucks for me.
Yeah, it was super ridiculous. Damn. For those on physical in Japan. So
you can relate to this. And you and I have gotten spoiled as well in terms of things that we've gotten accustomed to. Like just, what am I talking about? Like digital sales or like sales at Best Buy around town, you know, everyday stuff. But when you're throwing those numbers around, like you just got these two great titles on... modern platforms will say for a $20 bill. Do you remember back in the day in the late 80s, the 90s, and the early 2000s with all of the importing we did, shipping alone?
Oh, yeah,
was that or more?
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
I mean, we're getting games, brand new games, top to bottom, for less than some of the shipping charges we used to pay.
Okay, I'm sorry. KOF 98 Ultimate Match is currently $14 from Amazon Japan, and then so this is 13 global match. So twenty for 13, and then $14 for 90.
That's unbelievable.
I mean, I remember the era when anything import was like, okay, $80 at least, plus
correct,
plus shipping and all that.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So yeah, exciting to. Oh, I will say this one little dark spot on this whole thing: Marvel vs. Capcom collection coming to Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4/5, but not on Xbox.
Yep.
And when I say funny, I don't mean this literally. Let me make this clear. If I only had Xbox, I'm going to make this crystal clear. I would be livid through the roof. But it was wild to see so many jumping for joy after the Xbox press conference showcasing the latest in technology. And like a couple days later, the amount of Xbox people upset over a 20-plus-year-old 2D fighting game, throwing in the towel on Xbox. It was something to see.
So the reason we believe, and there is a good reason. I know it's not an acceptable reason for some people, but so these are made with Capcom's older engine, MT Framework, and the reality is that at this point, it just doesn't make sense for them to keep that engine updated on Xbox anymore.
There's a reason I'm laughing.
But it the thing is, it creates some very weird scenarios, which we've seen now, wherein Xbox is getting like the new Ace Attorney collection, but not getting the Marvel vs. Capcom collection.
That, yeah, wow.
If you don't understand the tech, that just seems like one of the most ridiculous things in the world. You're like, what in the why? But
may I be a butthead?
Sure.
Xbox is not getting, and I look, all jokes aside, I understand why. We're getting into the engine or the MT framework. Like, you and I don't have the know-how, the true understanding of the why, right? If there was a programmer or someone that knows this, they would school us, so to speak. But my butthead response is, if you go in my closet right now, I have physical copies that you can play of Persona 5 and Nier Automata on Switch.
Right.
I mean, it's like, what?
Yeah, I here's the thing, right? I have Street Fighter 6 on Xbox.
Okay.
That was the platform I decided to go to.
Uh-huh.
I have two different Wingman adapters in order to use all my fighting game controllers on Xbox.
Right.
And at this point, I have decided that any fighting game stuff I get going forward has to be PlayStation, you know? Mm. And even the point where, like, I think I'm okay here because my stick is a PS3, PS4 stick. And so the complication is there's in general, PS5 games can't use PS4 controllers.
Okay, but, yes, blanket stick, yes.
But with fighting sticks, they games can build in support for PS4 controllers if it's the PS5 version.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But if you are playing any PS4 game on a PS5, it'll automatically be able to use all PS4 controllers.
Yeah, you got it. Right.
So I'm not completely screwed, but I had been putting actual effort into playing fighting games on Xbox. I think I also got the Capcom recent Capcom collections on Xbox. You know, so for any Xbox fans out there who are mad about this, like, I'm getting screwed in this too, right?
Right.
And I've had to make a decision to move all my fighting game stuff over to PlayStation just because that is the more secure place to play it.
May I make a wild guess with no insider info?
Sure.
I think Microsoft or Xbox is going to backpedal and figure out, because of this whole, what's the word I used it earlier? This image repair, mm-hmm. the PR repair. I'm going to predict it does wind up getting on Xbox.
The problem is, like, they would have to pay Capcom to update MT Framework.
Molly, if I put $100 billion in your account right now, you know what I mean? That's the thing. You and I are paupers. We got to think about if we want to get that half gallon of ice cream or that extra chicken sandwich. We're talking about Microsoft. What do they got to flip them?
A couple hundred grand. Okay. I think you could have made that argument before they bought Activision. I think now that because kind of fun money doesn't exist on any kind of level that it used to exist.
Because they brought Microsoft. Okay, I saw this theory too. I don't know if you're alluding to this. This is just a theory someone had, and I kind of do subscribe to it. Even though Microsoft has, quote, unlimited money, and even though Xbox is the redheaded stepchild for years and was originally a pet project, and Xbox and 360 and all that jazz. When I say nobody, I'm talking about the current, like the other divisions, okay? Nobody wants Xbox in Microsoft. But if they would have just laid low, status quo, didn't spend $100 billion in the past 24 months... They could keep probably trucking along for as long as they wanted. But are you saying because they just spent 70, 80 billion and 9 billion the year before, now they've got eyeballs on them?
Yes.
What's the return?
I think they've got a lot more eyeballs on them now.
Yes.
I think they've got, it's like if you go to your mom, right? And it's like, can I borrow 10 bucks? Can I borrow 10 bucks? Can I borrow 15 bucks? Can I borrow 10 bucks? You know? And then one day you go to mom, like, can I borrow $8,522? Right? Like, you do that, your mom's going to, like, not be open to giving you those little amounts even
right
after that. Because they're going to be like, okay, I just gave you all that money. Like, you need to be doing something to make me give you money again. So I, because right. I saw somebody say something like the amount that Microsoft spent on Activision mm-hmm. would have, I don't even remember what was it? Was it 40?
I thought off the top of my head, I thought it was 70 range. Okay, 70,
70 billion. So let's say 70. Yeah. Hang on, sorry. I want to get like about the exact number. So that's 70 million billion. Okay, so if you're funding $200 million AAA games, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's 350.
Oh my God.
$200 million AAA games you could fund with the price that you paid for Activision. Right. 350.
Or Xbox could have finally gotten the proper version of Halo people wanted.
Yes. Xbox for 1 year, every single day, could release a $200 million AAA game.
Can I say something else that's horrible? I didn't know if you were going down this route. It's not even video game related, and I don't know if this number is true. I'm regurgitating internet facts, which, you know, is that this is how people vote these days, and it's taken as gospel. I'm thinking with that number, at the very least, you could have cured hunger, if not all over the world, at least the United States.
There's lots and lots of things.
It's unbelievable.
You ask yourself, like, okay, how many games did Microsoft actually get in that? But anyway, so I don't think they have the money to fund all of these. Okay, right? Because there was a point where Microsoft was funding a lot of these ports to Xbox, because then they'd say, okay, that strengthens the platform and they get more games for Game Pass and stuff like that, right? There were numerous Japanese games where specifically we had versions that either came to Xbox or were better, like Persona 4, I think, was one of them, where it had a better frame rate and better resolution on Xbox, because Microsoft was funding that. But if you're now saying, okay, we've got Call of Duty to put on Game Pass, we've got like these other kind of Activision games, the amount of reason you have to kind of fund those kind of projects like shrinks a lot.
Don't you? And ironically, because of Game Pass and everything in that streaming service, which we know is their one of their big goals, but because you keep hearing people regurgitate, you know, this can't be kept up. These AAA titles going to Game Pass because you need the money of the sales. And you correct me if I'm speaking ignorantly. In a weird, ironic twist, doesn't that almost force their hand to put these titles on other platforms to try and recoup some of the physical sales they're not getting on their own platform?
Yes.
It's crazy. I mean, you know what this reminds me of? And this is going to be a weird analogy because they're not one-to-one. This is almost like the whole Neo Geo thing. And I'm going to explain. I'm not talking about the price of games or whatever, in that if you look on paper, much like Game Dev Story, I know this is such a weird callback. On paper, the Neo Geo should have killed everybody. But in reality, because of other things business-wise or how, you know, the price of the cartridges or systems, reality doesn't work like that. Right. On paper, Microsoft should be killing everybody right now.
Yes.
Because on paper, if you showed me this on paper, like a report, I'd be like, oh my God. Like, this is going to be terrible. It's going to be it's all in Microsoft's hands. And it's amazing to see it's not quite playing out like that.
Well, you know, I don't know if you saw this. Digital Foundry just recently did a thing where they were like, on paper, the Xbox Series X is more powerful system than the PlayStation 5.
I saw this and didn't click it. Keep talking.
Why are there so many PlayStation 5 games that are running better than the Xbox versions? Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, there's lots of different things where, like, on paper, the Xbox probably should have been the winning console, you know, but it's not.
Right.
And so you can't just buy your way into this, and you can't just tech your way into it either.
This is very nerdy sidebar for those listening. I by the way, I love Digital Foundry. I think a couple of them might even follow me on Twitter. God knows why. But and My Life in Gaming, they're great. Beyond that, if you haven't watched the Modern Vintage Gamer, MVG's dissection and breakdown of how the emotion engine worked a few weeks ago on PlayStation 2 and, like, if it was the real deal and what it did good and what it didn't, I found that to be an amazing video.
I haven't watched that yet.
Yeah, because, you know what I mean? Because, as you know, on paper, PS2 in many ways was the least powerful console of that generation, but right, in the right hands and with some of the parallel processing, you know, stuff that I can, you know, I only can regurgitate, don't know how to do. But it also gave credibility as to why there were certain games that, even on more powerful consoles like the Xbox, like if the PS2 was the original hardware and taking advantage of some of the stuff it could do better. One example was like the Silent Hill fog. Like, why the hell couldn't Xbox do it the same? But that all gets explained in there. It's amazing. So, yeah,
so,
very good video.
Just to move us along, because it's 4th of July and we don't have a lot of time here. Marvel's Capcom Collection came out as part of the Nintendo Direct.
Yep.
Now, I am just not a Nintendo person, so it's not that I think these games look terrible. I just don't care that much.
I'll get your quick opinion. I'm not stopping. I'll have you blaze through this. You got the list. What's your quick take on actually playing as Zelda this time in the new Legend of Zelda?
I would rather have seen that come through the kind of Breath of the Wild style game. It looks neat. My concern is it going to be too gimmicky? Because for those who don't know, the new Legend of Zelda, it's kind of done in that,
The 2019. It was
Link's
the remake
Awakening
of the Game Boy.
Remake?
It is a cute, it is a cool, I will admit, it's a very nice, very cool artistic motif, but obviously not in the vein of the anime style Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, but no, it looks good, but
right.
Zelda has a wand. She copies items and then reproduces them to get past things.
Yeah.
My concerns are, is that gimmick going to get old? And also, as somebody who's played a lot of Animal Crossing over the years, Nintendo has had a really bad habit of making it cumbersome to deal with a lot of item management in some games. And so I'm worried about how easy, if you're copying all these different things, how easy is it going to be to get in there and decide what you want to use? And is that going to bog down the game? So I'm curious about it, but I'm not incredibly excited for it, but I am curious.
Okay. We talked about Metroid Prime 4 a little bit, so we kind of covered that.
Yeah, excited if it's I'm interested in playing it, but that's gonna be problem is that is I have a feeling that's gonna be a game you're gonna want to play on Switch 2.
Oh boy.
Because did that trailer look too good for what the Switch
can I say so? I'm gonna say two things. I'm gonna say it's Switch, but I have to tell you something. I went back to the official Nintendo of America feed, like we're talking official now. Mm-hmm. Just because I was doing notes. This wasn't even my goal, right? Like, I wasn't looking for what I'm going to tell you. And, you know, in the official Nintendo of America tweet, they said, Samus Aran is back. Metroid Prime 4 Beyond will be released on Nintendo Switch.
Oh, I think it's both. I think it's going to be, like, one of those games that ends up being crashing like a lot of other games.
I agree with you on that. I think there were some people originally that didn't even think it was going to be on.
Oh, Switch. Yeah. No, okay. I think it's absolutely both, but
okay.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's going to be the kind of game you're going to want to play on the new hardware.
Let me say this. Okay, so how about this? If you're looking to wrap up, I'll say this, and not to cut you off. So we got GBGP 58. I've got my equipment back in order, back in line. We do have a heat wave coming up here on the West Coast, so if I don't die from the apocalypse... Let's see. You leave. When do you leave for Japan?
Not far enough that we could do another show before.
Okay, that's okay. So we'll see how things go. We can always pack some of this stuff. I'm going to kind of do a new process on our notes, and it's only taken me 15 years to learn. So, I'll let Molly speak on one or two, whatever she wants. I'll let her pick. The last thing that I'll say, two things I'll close with for myself. One, I always love making us feel old. So yes. Let's not forget GVGP 58 here as we enter July. But just a couple weeks ago, our most favorite blue critter, Sonic himself, on June 23rd, turned 33.
I still remember getting my original U.S. copy of that, like going to a store and getting it.
You know how I got my U.S. copy? Summer 91? Do you remember that deal if you bought the Genesis or whatever? Because remember, you know my story. I had it and sold it a couple times. You remember they did that deal by the Sega Genesis, get Sonic free in the mail?
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, unbelievable. 33
I remember getting
years
in
ago.
Trouble at a party because I was trying to show my younger cousin Sonic. Mm-hmm. And my mom got mad because I was trying to put video games on the TV instead of letting the family watch TV. Because we were having like a, I don't know if it was Thanksgiving or what it was, but I remember that.
And then I will say this. This was news as of today. Tokyo Game Show 2024 has its dates. Thursday, September 26th through Sunday the 29th. So TGS is coming up in a couple months.
And PlayStation's coming back to it.
Yeah, interesting tidbit there is PlayStation is fully returning to the Tokyo Game Show. They haven't had a major presence at the show since 2019.
I will say the last TGS I went to was pretty sad, so I'm not sure. Like, it's funny because I went to TGS 3 times, I think, and in the span of those 3 times, I literally saw it declining. Wow. Like the getting less booths and getting more smartphone games shown versus traditional games. So I'd love for it to kind of come back to its kind of former glory, but we'll see.
And then with that, so do you have any final things that
I
you'd
do,
like to say?
I do, because we've had a couple of really nice comments on the website that I wanted to just read real quick.
Okay.
So we had from, let me go back to this page.
All right.
And not that page. Let's go to...
You can gas me up, my ego.
So this is from our podcast about the Xbox, and this is from Ryan. He says, Absolutely love the podcast. It's crazy listening back to 10-year-old shows y'all did and hearing the same concerns with the deletion of mid-sized game productions. Everything now feels AAA or AAAA if Ubisoft is to be believed, which they're not, or indie. Some of my favorite games growing up could never be made nowadays. The newest LEGO Star Wars game has to be this open-world, planet-hopping, side-quest-ridden mess. Instead of a tight and concise collection of platforming stages to fit into the game's market. Some part of me wishes we could return to the 80s PC games industry, where tech-based venture capitalists would give development funds to a bunch of 20-somethings who would crank out whatever they desired. As someone who will soon graduate university in the hopes of working in the games industry, I desperately hope that serious restructurings occur.
Wow. So that was from Ryan, you said?
Yep, that's from Ryan.
Well, thank you very much, Ryan. And wow, you said graduating university, so you are a younger listener.
Yeah.
We have some longtime fans from both of our respectfully podcast past, Molly and I. So, Ryan, I want to thank you. I always love, I appreciate the old listeners. I've become friends with some of them, but new listeners. So that means, Ryan, if we're stereotyping here, okay, if let's put him in his early 20s. That means when GVGP started, he would have been between 10 and 12. But I do love that. I always appreciate the fans. I'm saying this out loud. This is not a promise, and fans at home can ignore this, let it go in out one ear and out the other. One day, I wouldn't mind doing a call-in type show, talking to the fans if they're well-prepared, maybe doing a special episode like that. But yeah, thank you so much, Ryan, and best of luck. It's great to hear these type of comments and letters.
I know Anthony will especially want me to read this one. This is from Fan of the Site.
All right.
And he says, I'm sorry, he or she, or whatever, not sure who this is. Anthony, I have to say your idea of an R Resident Evil that takes place in Silent Hill, the way you described, that's one of the best game ideas I've heard in a long time.
Oh, thank you so much.
So there you go. There's your puffing up for this episode.
Okay. Oh, awesome. So, yeah. So let me do this because you're saying it. So leave comments on the site. We love getting our egos blown up. That said, in the past, do we still have an email address to provide?
Yes. So first, let me say real quick. that was my cheapo sound effect of static radio noise, whatever, to indicate that I'm cutting into this podcast, because this is Editor Molly, and I'm just here to say that I figured I should probably check about what regular Molly on the show is about to say, and of course, she is wrong, because the old podcasts currently are listenable, but the problems that regular Molly does talk about are still problems. And I don't know when those old shows might not be listenable again, because it has happened many times in the past. So, other Molly is about to tell you the old shows are not up right now. They actually are. You can listen to them, but the problems she's going to tell you about do still exist. So, just want to make that clear. Okay, back to the show. Just as a note, the old episodes are not currently accessible. I don't know what's going on with them. It is telling me that I'm going to have to find a new host for the podcast stuff. So the problem is with the podcast has been that hosting it on our current site, the actual shows themselves, is that when new shows would come out, it would be a big hit on the server bandwidth, and I'd get in trouble for that. So it's possible I could just put up all the old shows, since there's not going to be a lot of people streaming them anyway. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to find a more permanent solution for that, because it seems like the solution we've had for a while might not be viable anymore. So I am trying to figure that out. So at least the most recent couple episodes will be there, but I'm trying to figure out the older shows.
May I ask something ignorant, because I'm not educated on this back-end stuff? I'm stupid. Are our podcasts still accessible by way of Apple Podcasts from magical podcast storage land out in Never Never
Land? The problem is those things don't actually store the show.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm trying to figure out what would be a good solution. And there are paid solutions, but the problem is, since we don't do a lot of podcasts.
The justification.
Yes, it's justifying paying for the show. I don't think it would be that much. It is possible we could set up a thing where, like, if people are willing to pay, if everybody out there is willing to collectively pay maybe $5 to $10 a month. Not saying every person individually. I'm saying as a collective, if we could get like a $5 or $10 coming in, I could maybe pay for storage. But
you're talking grand total cumulatively.
Grand total across anybody.
So if someone flipped us, just for sake of conversation, we're not asking, we're just spitballing. If someone flipped us a $20 bill, we'd be covered for the month.
Yes, I need to find out what the actual cost would be. I don't think it's a lot, but the problem is just it's like. If we're not having a show for a few months, then if I'm paying for that storage, it's like, is it make sense to pay for that or find a different solution? And obviously, if we got to the point where we were actually taking in any amounts of money a month for this stuff, there would be considerations for having the show on a much more regular basis than it is right now.
And we'll say this out there. If somebody knows something, an alternative or something, you know, even better than what we're saying, leave it in the comment. We are more than open to that. You know, if there's something we're missing or not privy to, feel free to let us know. We appreciate it.
And it might be the case where I put up all the old episodes on like a different storage solution, like a Google Drive folder, for example, right?
Right.
And you could go in and just download all the old episodes, but like in terms of actually streaming them,
because
the problem comes in is that when you're subscribing to a podcast and the new episode comes out, you have a lot of people either downloading or streaming at the exact same time. And then also, if you listen to a show twice, for example, if you didn't download it, then you're actually using the bandwidth to stream it twice versus downloading it once. So these are some of the complications that come up in podcasts. And is that a lot of these solutions like Spotify or Apple podcast app or whatever, they encourage you often to kind of just stream that show. And when you're streaming, it's pulling bandwidth for every time you stream versus a one-time downloading. And that's where some of the podcast complications come in for people. So I'm trying to find a better solution, but just for now, if you can't access old shows, then you'll understand why you can't, and I am looking for a solution. To your question, Anthony, we do still have the email address. The problem with the email is that it seems to have gotten on a number of Spanish spamming services.
Really?
So I'm looking right now and I've got tons and tons of emails trying to sell me things in Spanish.
Wow, okay.
So it can be hard to dig through the emails for us. So if you do want to leave a comment, the absolute best way, and I will get better about watching for these, is to go to radio.morningproject.com.
All right.
And leave a comment on the shows. I have to approve all the comments, so whatever show you comment on, I will see it in the back end in terms of there being new comments there. So you can always comment there. You can DM us on Twitter. You can now DM us on Blue Sky. Those are perfectly workable ways to contact us. You know, we also do have the email address, but just know that it's going to take me a while to dig through this
because
there is a lot of Spanish spam in here for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, with that being said, once again, want to thank you guys and gals for tuning in here to GBGP 58. I'm going to get one more shameless plug in here for Molly. Two things. Don't forget to check out mollyelpatterson.com. That's mollielpatterson.com. Also, when we have clearance, we can't say it yet. We alluded to this on GVGP 57. There are one, if not two, a couple very old school inspired projects for modern day gamers coming on the horizon. So when we get clearance and we're able to say it, we'll let you guys and gals know. So with that, on behalf of Molly and myself, Anthony, we want to thank you once again for tuning in to GVGP 58, and we'll catch you next time.